You're listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. Hosted by business and political expert Jay Amernick, political visionary and entrepreneur Rick Raddatz, and me, journalist in all media, Heather Vail, The Political Fix reveals the answers we're all looking for. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com. And welcome to The Political Fix on this Wednesday, September the 24th. We are now into the fall season. No more summertime. No more hot weather. Well, that's not exactly true. Anyway, I'm Heather Vail, and I'm here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Jay is a strategic planner who helps his clients create and implement plans, goals, tactics, and benchmarks. He's also the bridge in Nevada for Israeli companies who want to expand their business in the U.S., and he has development labs that create smartphone apps and inventions. Rick Raddatz is a serial entrepreneur and internet marketer with a degree in philosophy. His political development's called The Solution, and that solution is to cap and prioritize government spending, as you will find out more about on this show. I'm Heather Vail, also known as The Unwrapper. I'm a journalist, interviewer, and all-round media personality. So, welcome to the show, guys. Hey, Jay, how's your week been?
Summer is not over.
You said last week the summer of Jay... No more summer of...
I retract that comment. I'm never letting it in. I'm having too good a time.
It's a non-ending summer of Jay.
Endless summer.
Endless summer. Okay, yes. I think that was a song at one point.
It was a movie.
A movie and a song, yeah. I think.
From the movie. Probably.
The summer of Jay sounds very uplifting and wow, you know. The fall of Jay sounds like a Greek tragedy.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to the fall of Jay. The autumn of Jay.
That sounds like you're dying slowly.
Yes, right? Exactly.
September of my years.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Let's just let it go until it's winter, and then it can be the winter of Jay.
Yeah.
That's even worse. Jesus. Now I know why bears hibernate.
Okay, so Jay's going to start hibernating this year.
This will
be fun. Okay.
Yeah. See what happens.
All right, but Rick's had a really interesting week. So you weren't here last week, Rick. You were on a secret mission in Washington.
I was on a secret mission.
Love to find out what happened on that secret mission.
Yeah, so I went to Washington, D.C. I spent a week in training in political activism. And then I had a couple meetings set up as well with some pretty powerful individuals, people you've seen on TV, and I met one of them by accident, actually, in a coffee shop. It was kind of funny that I hadn't planned, but yeah, that's what happens in Washington, D.C. when you're just squeeze the proximity together there. But yeah, that was a very, very good week, and we have a new. A member of our leadership committee, if you want to call it that, in the movement. We have a full-time D.C. rep who is on board because she believes in the mission. She is a graduate student at GMU, George Mason University, and she has been struggling in some of her classes thinking, boy, there's got to be a better way to structure government action, and if competition is the answer in the free market, you know, isn't there some kind of parallel in government action and some way of adding competition into the mix. And so she on her own was already on the verge of discovering cap and prioritize. And so when she heard about it, just kind of by accident, she was in the same room as I was talking to other people, and she just got it instantly. And so she is on board. She'll be representing us in meetings in D.C., and also reaching out to the academic community at GMU and elsewhere. So that alone is a big development. But I also met with the objectivist people, and I can tell you those stories if you want. And I met with some other political action figures that I can't talk about.
And somehow, in the midst of all that, you managed to get a new couch, a new big screen TV, and a new webcam.
Yeah, I'm very efficient. I have a new webcam, so hopefully the quality is better.
It is better. It's noticeably better. Yeah.
The reason for the big screen is that Gauntlet.com just launched, and I'm a big Gauntlet fan. I'm dating myself back in the 80s, but So now the whole family is using this this big screen here to play Gauntlet together, and it's a blast.
I have no idea what Gauntlet is.
Gauntlet is a video game where you get four different players at the same time running around this little dungeon, killing all everything you see.
Okay, Jay, are you familiar with this?
I not really.
Okay.
I'm not a game guy.
Rick's not exactly dating himself. He's genre-sizing himself.
Is that what it is?
We're all the same age. Come on, we're all the same age. Like,
no, I mean, I'm from the Space Invaders era. You know, when it comes to games. So I mean,
wait, was that the one?
At the time, it was high tech.
What about Pac-Man?
That was for women like Pac-Man.
No, Ms. Pac-Man was for women.
Okay.
That's why they made a Ms. Pac-Man.
We liked the guys like things where you could shoot.
Donkey Kong?
Or race a car. I didn't like Donkey Kong.
Mario Brothers?
Nah, I didn't like any of that crap. Oh. I like games where you could shoot something.
Okay, well that's what Rick's talking about, so why didn't you do Gauntlet?
Was it a video game?
You didn't have any friends to play with. I get it. You need four people.
What's the top story?
Okay, well, first of all, we need to find it. Let's have Rick define the solution for people that are listening and not quite sure what we're talking about when we say cap and prioritize.
Hang on 1 second.
Okay.
Okay, so the cap and prioritize, to put it really simply, is where we step one is to cap government spending to make it sustainable at least. Okay, I think we can all agree on that, left and right. But politically, that's hard. It's hard to make that happen. So to make it politically viable and sustainable, we need a step two. Step two is to take the money that's left, trillions of dollars, and find a way to actually have Congress or other levels of government prioritize that money. In other words, rank it from top to bottom so the most important stuff is on top and the waste, fraud, and abuse is exposed on the bottom. And by prioritizing, reprioritizing, reprioritizing over the years, as hard as it might be, that's what's going to force government to care about results and constantly improve its ability to help the people who need help most. And so if you add it all together, we end up with the idea that achieves the political right goal of limited government, in fact, one that even constantly shrinks as a percentage of our economy, and yet also achieves the political left goal of constantly improving the government's ability to help those who need help most, in other words, social justice.
Okay. Sounds good. So Jay asked for the top story. There's two options for a top story. We can have a second story today if we want. Now, one of them is a farther-reaching story, but I'm going to go with the old journalistic standby, if it bleeds, it leads. And that's going to be our top story, our first top story of the day. From Birmingham, Alabama, a man fired a day earlier from UPS killed two co-workers and then himself yesterday. He was able to evade security by wearing a work uniform and entered through a truck dock in the rear of the building. The two former UPS co-workers were shot dead within minutes yesterday, and the shooter, identified by police as Kerry Joe Tesney, was found dead on top of his gun from what police called a self-inflicted wound. He entered after about 80 drivers had left for the day to deliver packages from the Birmingham Center. Authorities haven't released the slain people's names, but they say that they were members of management. 45-year-old Tesney of the Birmingham suburb Trussville is described as having been troubled over his work and financial situation. He and his wife have two children, and the family has been active members of their local church for over 10 years. The church held a prayer service last night for the Tesney family and the slain workers. The UPS warehouse is in an industrial area just north of the Birmingham airport, and its parking lot is surrounded by barbed wire. Tesney opened fire either in or near some offices inside the warehouse. One body was found outside one of the offices, and the other two were inside an office. Tesney's firing was finalized on Monday when he got his final notice in the mail. Besides his job with UPS, Tesney and his wife Melissa were distributors for Advocare, a multi-level marketing company that sells health and fitness products. They have a website that advertises the business and says, just tell us your needs, your dreams, your desires, and we'll make it happen. Now, Jefferson County court records showed that a Birmingham business sued Tesney and UPS in 2010, claiming that he had wrongly picked up a $4,000 radiator for shipment, either intentionally or by mistake. That lawsuit went on for years before a judge ruled in favor of Tesney and the shipping company a year ago. Exactly. September 23rd, 2013. Now, it's not clear at this point whether that lawsuit may have played a role in his firing, but that's what we know, and that's the top story. Thoughts, Jay?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's a huge and horrifying tragedy. But the thing that sticks out with me actually is the lawsuit over a radiator that lasted for years.
A $4,000 radiator, yeah, and it went on for years, yeah.
No, someone gives the radiator back $4,000. This isn't that's insane.
Yeah, that is insane.
That is a waste and a misuse of our judicial system to drag it on for some guy. How much did he spend in the time? You know, I don't know. And unfortunately that lessens the blow of the tragedy of him. Of murdering two people and then killing himself when he had a wife and children, which is a whole separate issue. But the thing again that sticks out with me is this radiator. I mean, I don't know. I'm a little baffled by it, quite frankly. Why?
Yeah, and the thing is, UPS. Like, I have dealt with UPS, and they have broken packages and stuff, and they're always willing to pay for the mistake. I mean, it's not.
Yeah. But again, forget that. Forget on the UPS end of it. At what point does some judge say, this is ridiculous and a waste of my time?
After
Goodbye.
3 years. Why? After 3 years.
How about after?
Apparently.
How about after the first time you walk into the courtroom? I'm not going to, I mean, $4,000 for a radiator. Where's the radiator? Get it back to him and then let's call it a day. I don't know. It just doesn't seem that complicated to me.
I agree. God. I agree. It's not that complicated.
And again, I mean, we can talk about the tragedy of him, you know, murdering two coworkers and then himself and committing suicide. But I don't know how to make, you know, any kind of sense out of it.
Yeah.
You know, so you know that I'm at a loss for.
This is a type of story we've seen before. Where I mean, they've made a term called going postal. I mean,
right. Well, because it was post office workers, right? That's right.
Right, UPS, postal. I mean, okay, they're shipping companies. There's not that huge difference. What I'm baffled by is why this tends to happen in that industry, or is it just that those are only the stories that we hear about?
You know, to be honest, I don't know a lot about that industry. I mean, well, the post office and UPS are two very different things, and we don't really hear that.
Yes, really, however, they both.
And again, it hasn't happened for a very, very long time in a post office, as far as I know. And it was sort of a what's the word I'm looking for? It was like a thing at one point in time. But it sort of it hasn't happened in a while. I have no idea what it is. And
yeah, lately it's been school shootings that have been more prevalent.
Yeah.
But either way, it comes down to someone who feels oppressed or depressed, one or the other or both, and suddenly snaps. You know, they take out their anger in an uncontrollable way. So, I mean, that in itself it's sad that it happens, and it always impacts more than just them when it does happen, which is the worst part of it.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, he left behind a wife and children who were having financial problems.
And who knows who the management who got killed, who knows who they left behind as well.
Well, right. Yeah. I mean, we can, you know, say it was incredibly selfish of him. I just don't think that does it justice. I just can't wrap my head around that. I don't understand it. And again, to tie it into Captain Prioritize, you know, other than, you know, to say once Captain Prioritize is in place, you know, the economy gets better for all. There's been a lot lately, a lot of talk about, you know, inequality and and the income gap and everything like that. And Cap and Prioritize will address that to an extent. And hopefully, you know, lessen the amount of times things like this happen. But
yeah, well, I'd like to get Rick's opinion on that, but let's take a quick break first and we'll be right back on the Political Fix. Welcome back to the Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm here with Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz, my co-hosts. Before the break, we were talking about the top story, which was a UPS man in Birmingham, Alabama, going postal on his co-workers and killing two people from management. Now, Jay was tying that into Cap and Prioritize, and I said I would like to hear Rick's opinion on that. So let's hear it, Rick.
Yeah, there really is two ways to connect it into Cap and Prioritize. One is what Jay said, which is Cap and Prioritize is kind of an advancement in societal organization, and so we should expect a continued trend towards a better society in general. But there's also another way to connect it, which is to say that, you know, this is why we need government in the first place. We have to have some sort of society that's organized and has the power to fund a police force and the military and so on, because crazy people like this exist in the world. And it's a tragedy, yes, but it's a very predictable one. We can predict that this will happen again. We can predict that in a society without a police force and a lot of the infrastructure we have in terms of capitalism and productivity and therefore prosperity in general, it'd be even worse. Like if you want to go view the extreme, go live in Somalia or Afghanistan for a while, and then you'll be wanting to live in a more organized society. So, but here's where it gets into Cap and Prioritize. Once we have, once we all agree that we need to have some sort of government that's powerful enough to monopolize the use of force, both within a country and also against other countries, then, or in protection of against other countries, then we're going to have positions of political power that are incredibly powerful that have to be filled. And if we let people just take those positions of power, that's bad. So we have to have elections to make politicians compete for that power. But if we're going to have that, we need to have voting. And that means the voters, the people, can start voting themselves property through government action. And that's where we have the left-right conflict. And so this is all part of an actual very logical and actually pretty simple logical progression that leads inevitably to the next step, which is to incentivize voters to vote for more mature government, which is, in this case, Cap and Prioritize, where the left gets the pursuit of social justice thanks to the prioritizing, and the right gets the limited government they want thanks to the cap. And it's that combination that respects both sides that is going to make it politically viable and sustainable, and that's where we end up with a mature country. So it actually connects in that it proves, it kind of begins this logical chain.
Okay. So are you saying people that are anti-government, for example, libertarians, are also mm-hmm. anti-police?
Well, there's a lot of different types of libertarians. There are some libertarians that are so far out there, they call themselves anarcho-capitalists because they believe in very, very little government. Some even believe in no government because they believe that any government is the use of force, and that use of force in that way is simply wrong. And maybe in some imaginary ideal world, they're correct. And even if you want to try to move that direction, there's a question of how. You know, you got to start where we are. And so that's where the pragmatic libertarians come in, where the pragmatic libertarians say, okay, yeah, we want to aim towards a more and more free society, but we have to go in steps. We have to start with where we are and get there. And then so libertarians are famous for fighting each other more than they fight everyone else because they're all competing to be kind of either the most pure or the most realistic within the libertarian camp, and those two forces conflict, they think. What they don't realize is that Cap and Prioritize is the transition plan from the mess we have now towards a more and more mature society, one that can handle more and more limited government. And in other words, it's a way of earning our way to reduce government. We have to make government better so that we can make it smaller. It may be counterintuitive to some people, but if you think about it, you know, the better the libertarians get at telling people and showing people how good limited government can be, the more limited government you can have. And so libertarians have got to start talking about how prioritizing spending can make government really good. And it's the only way that they're going to get that cap that they want.
Okay, see, we have seen what happens when there's no government, when there's no lawmakers, when there's no police, when there's no one in control, when there's no leadership. I mean, we've seen stories like Lord of the Flies. We know it'll collapse into anarchy. We know that this is not going to be good. So how can they sit there and say, yeah, let's just let everyone run wild and somehow that's going to be a solution?
Well, because they're not thinking completely is the problem. They it's a very common problem in politics where someone imagines some better future and then they want to help make it happen. And in the case of communism, for example, you know, communists have this ideal image, this ideal end in mind, where we are all sharing so effectively with each other that we don't need a government for that reason. Okay, good luck. You know, it's, in order to do that, you have to educate and mold the citizen in terms of their private actions so completely that, you know, greed and selfishness are just not a concern anymore, and that's not going to happen. Libertarians make the exact opposite mistake. They believe they have to educate and shape voters so completely that they vote for truly limited government. Not going to happen. It's the same exact mistake. It leads to two very different visions of government. And yet what Cap and Prioritize says is that as long as we take a pragmatic approach, we can march towards both extremes at the same time, slowly. And the idea here is this. If we cap government so that the amount of taxes we need to pay constantly shrink, but we maintain the purchasing power of government by constantly prioritizing, we're finding better and better ways of using that constant purchasing power. So now we're helping people better than ever before, even though taxes are shrinking. If you keep that trend line out towards the future, you arrive at a point where taxes are so low, like 0.01% of the economy, and government is so good through competition at really helping people that government itself becomes the best charity in town and can be voluntarily funded. In other words, we can reach a point, at least theoretically, where we mature into a point where we are free because government is so limited, but also free because we are sharing so well. So I don't know how far down that path humanity can get, but I know the way to get there is by this combination, this dual approach of cap and prioritize. And I spoke with several anarcho-capitalists over the week, and some of them get it and some of them don't, but that's the way life works.
Yeah, okay. So, Jay, did you have anything to add to Rick's taking your thoughts and adding to it?
No, I mean, it's, you know, well, you know, other than it, you know, it just reinforces, you know, one of the things that I've been talking about these many weeks, that, you know, that when you get out so far on the fringe, you get so loony, you know, that you're not dealing in reality anymore. You're dealing in this sort of weird fantasy of just an impossible utopia of, yes, it, you know, to quote Winston Churchill, he said, democracy is the worst form of government besides all those other kinds, which means we need something. You know, it's just that's just the, you know, the nature, you know, you brought up, you know, Lord of the Flies, which is fiction. I think you know, Golding was onto something there, you know, of what would happen, you know, should there be no government. You could look no further than, you know, the Wild West, you know, less than 100 years into our country. You can also look to, you know, now there's places in, you know, I think like Wyoming and Montana where there's government, but, you know, and there's police and everything like that, but these people live so far out in the hinterlands that, you know, God forbid something happens, the police can't get to them in time. So they're left to defend for themselves, but it's, you know, I don't think that's an ideal situation. So there has to be, if the role of government is to protect the citizens, they should be protecting them no matter how far out they live. And it's because they haven't prioritized. It's because they're doing other things.
Right. Well, they can't protect them no matter how far out they live because they can't pay for the police force to.
Because they haven't prioritized.
Okay, but if people choose to live in the middle of nowhere because they like their privacy, the police force isn't going to put more police on the force just to police them in case something happens. I mean, that's their choice to live out there.
No, but the government then also shouldn't make it illegal for them to be able to protect themselves.
It's not. It's in your constitution. The right to bear arms is in your constitution.
Some of these guys have complaints. I mean, I don't want to get into a gun control discussion, but a lot of them feel that they cannot legally have the weaponry they need. I'm not talking about an RPG or a half track or a Sherman tank or something. They want, a semi-automatic weapon to protect themselves on their ranch.
Wait a minute. Stop oppressive. I have a pet peeve here.
Okay.
The right to bear arms has nothing to do with the right to protect yourself against another individual. That's a side effect.
Right.
The purpose of this right, and Jay agrees with me on this, the reason they have this right is to protect ourselves against the government. Okay. All the other kind of stuff comes in there. And so you may want it for hunting. You may want it for personal protection. Need it so that the government, so the wrong guy doesn't take over government because of charisma. And suddenly it's easy for them to just take over society because nobody can defend themselves.
That's
so
right.
it might seem like a far-fetched thing, but we always want to keep that right there just so that there's no question. Okay.
It's not so far-fetched. Because we've seen a couple examples of it. We've seen, that was the first thing Adolf Hitler did.
It's far-fetched. Okay. Well, it's far-fetched to say that we need it against the government rather than we need it against the guy who's breaking down the front door trying to rob us. So.
We're talking about original intent.
Yeah.
The original intent was not to protect ourselves. It was not self-defense. It was not the right to defend our property, to defend our family, to defend ourselves.
It was so the citizens could defend themselves against a tyrannical government took over. Yes. Keep in mind, it was a different time. There were no tanks.
So time has evolved. Time has evolved. I mean, there's rules around what constitutes arms that you can have and how you can use it and, how big your knife can be and all this kind of stuff, what kind of gun you can have. Like, there's rules around this stuff because times have changed. It's no longer just about government.
You know what? Back in the day, when our country was founded, I seriously doubt, I don't know this for sure, but I seriously doubt that there was even an issue about people having guns for personal protection and hunting, because they probably had to hunt to actually get food. Okay.
Yeah.
And so really, my guess is that the only real question they were debating and trying to ensure by having this right in the Bill of Rights is the government versus the people kind of issue. Now, fast forward 200 years, times are good. Most people don't have to hunt for their butter, or whatever they want, parquet. And so we are now so far removed from the hardship that our forefathers had to deal with, that I think it can seem far-fetched that you need rights to have a gun to protect against the government, because it just generations upon generations of people have now grown up and died thinking that we've solved it. We're living good now. I don't have that concern. I can keep my door unlocked. Even I remember my grandmother talking about that, how in Knox, Indiana, everyone keeping their doors unlocked and everyone knew each other and the whole bit, and then over time the welfare state came along and everyone's cheating the system, and Knox is now one big welfare state, Knox, Indiana. But the point is, even though it's far-fetched from our current daily lives, it's still necessary from the larger perspective of making sure our government stays in line.
Yeah, and again, that was the original debate. The debate was, we don't need to put that in there. And the people who were proponents of it were saying, yeah, because at some point in time, some guy may come along and try to screw with things, which is the same reason why they put freedom of speech in there. They said, well, we know that. This is why our country was founded. We don't need to write it down. And then the guy said, yes, we do. We absolutely do, because somebody's going to screw with this if we don't put it down right now. They didn't say screw with this, but
they
were much more eloquent than I am.
Got it. Okay. We're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have Jay Amernick's segment, Inside Perspective. So we'll be right back with you on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail here with Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz, my co-hosts. Before the break, we were discussing the cap and prioritize solution that Rick has in many different incarnations. That was quite the discussion that went in many ways, including the right to bear arms. But now we're going to change course. We're going to go into the inside of government with a segment that we call Inside Perspective with Jay Amernick. Jay has experience working within the government confines, and so he can tell us what exactly happens from the inside. So go ahead, Jay, with Inside Perspective.
Thank you very much. This week, it is simply this. I'm going to talk about broken campaign promises. And don't worry, Rick, I'm going to tie it in. Don't worry, you're going to be very happy.
Default opinion is that I disagree with you, but we'll see. We'll see.
All right. We'll just wait till next week. And I was going to do a different one, but
have
I did
we
this
already given up on this week?
No, God almighty.
It's the fall of Jay.
It is. It's over. It's the like it's coming apart at the seams already. Look, so there is a saying in Washington, and it is, where you stand depends on where you sit. And that has to do with your office, your committees, things like that. So we'll use the president of the United States as the example, because they're the ones that do the big grandiose campaign promises and then inevitably don't fulfill them or outright break them once they're in office. And that is because when they start off, you know, they're not privy to everything that the president of the United States knows. So they may make a comment, you know, I'll use our most recent example, President or then Senator Obama, when he was running, said, I'm going to close down Guantanamo Bay. That was very popular. He gets into office. The first thing that happens is he gets into a meeting with the national security advisors and the whole security team. And they say, A, B, and C, this is what's going on. The president then goes, oh, my God, we cannot close down Guantanamo for whatever reason, because of whatever new information he has that we, the public, do not have. So that is why campaign promises get broken. That was not that was just the example I want to use. But I want to talk about two pieces to where it's pertinent to CMP. And that is, one, the key to getting this implemented is to first seek to understand and then be understood, which is actually one of the seven habits of highly effective people. But you want to know where your member of Congress is coming from before you launch into a litany of why CNP is good, because you may be barking up the wrong tree unless you've contoured your case to appeal to them. So that's A, and then B is, once in place, there will be government obviously will be smaller, and there'll be less need for outrageous and grandiose campaign promises.
Okay.
But the key is, again, when looking at a member of Congress or a president, vice president, is, again, it's where you stand depends on where you sit in Washington.
Okay. Rick, do you disagree?
Well, I agree as far as Jay went, but I would, I guess, add one more element into the mix that I think is more dominant in regards to campaign promises. And that is simply that, we want politicians to pander to us. That's, and we want that because the opposite is horrible. You know, having a politician so powerful that we pander to them, is not what we want. We want politicians to pander to us. And so, the whole point of the elections, especially to limited check and balance positions of power and the free speech along with it, the whole point of all that is to give politicians the incentive to pander to us aggressively. And actually, we do it so well now that it's in a sense, it's too much, because pandering isn't always wise. You can pander to people and get their votes and promise them all this kind of stuff, and they'll go, yeah, and they may already know that they can't deliver it. It's all game. It's all a political game.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Jay agrees. He's nodding his head. Yeah. So I would just say that it's more than just the information they know. That kind of assumes that they're actually trying to do the right thing when they make a campaign promise. I think that almost all of them are playing games. They're speaking the truth that their side knows. And so I totally agree with where you stand is where you sit. The way to change that, and as Jay did mention, I agree with this, absolutely, is that camp and prioritize is a limit on what politicians can actually do. And it's so limiting, because a cap is a limit and the requirement that they prioritize is yet another limit on government, so it's like a double limit. These new limits are so restrictive in some sense that they can't do anything but the best stuff, okay? Which is what will make the left happy in time, as they understand it. That's the whole idea.
Right. Well, and also to add like another layer onto it, if once it's in place, and then obviously a rising tide lifts all boats, things will be better for all people. So if some guy comes along and tries to bring it back and just goes free puppies for everybody if I'm elected, people who would normally be into that are going to say, well, wait a minute, I can get my own puppy. I don't need you. I don't want a government puppy. I want my own. And they won't buy into it. That's an example. It's a widget. A puppy is a widget.
No. I let's be even more specific.
Okay.
A politician who wanted to promise free puppies, in the context of cap and prioritize, would have to say that we're going to cancel the free kitty cat program.
Yes.
No, they would have to say there's only 100 puppies available, and then they're marketing. We're dealing with scarcity.
Buy them now. This is actually a very important – we're using kind of a funny example here, but it's a very important political incentive distinction. Because if in an uncapped, unprioritized budget, we can say, oh, puppies are good. I want puppies, okay? Or to make it more realistic, I want to help the homeless. That's a good thing. I want to help the homeless. And under cap and prioritize, they'll have to say, well, wait a minute. We have 15 programs to help the homeless, and based on results, 13 of them or whatever aren't working, and here are the one or two that are working. And so let's deprioritize those couple of things and change those couple of things and then extra fund those things that are working right now. And you see how big of a difference that is? Where camp and prioritize gives politicians the political cover that they need to actually govern. Okay, that's the difference between uncapped, unprioritized government and capped and prioritized government. It gives politicians the political cover they need to actually do what truly is wise.
Yes, gets us out of the silly season.
Yeah.
Okay, so in Jay's example, it would be, I don't want the government helping the homeless. I'll just go help the homeless myself and go volunteer at a soup kitchen or something.
But
But the problem is, here's how it works now, to use Rick's example. There are 14 programs, 13 of them aren't working. So the other 13 come back and say, oh, it's because you didn't give us enough money. And they find some willing ear in Washington to say, oh, okay, of course, let's more money and let's raise taxes. That's the vicious cycle everything's in now. That needs to stop, because clearly these are things that, no matter how much money you throw at them, aren't going to work. And then to go back to what Rick said earlier about government getting smaller, and he said it seems counterintuitive. It actually seems quite intuitive. It's working smarter, not harder. It makes it a lean, mean fighting machine.
Spend less, spend better, spend less, spend better. Capital prioritize.
Tastes right. Great, less filling.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
Okay.
You can have both.
Apparently. Okay. So, on that note, we're going to take another very quick break. When we come back, we're going to hear Rick's rant. This is the highlight of the show. Can't wait to hear it. Right back with you on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. And before the break, we were talking about government puppies and why people don't want government puppies, they want their own puppies. Which became not the puppy metaphor, but became about the homeless, to make more sense.
Yeah.
So, but during the break, we were actually talking, Rick and I were talking about, and if you were on the Hangout, you would have seen this, but if you're not on the Hangout, you wouldn't have heard this. We were just talking about how the right to bear arms has morphed over time. So even though originally the intent might have been government, Rick admitted that that is not necessarily the intent now, correct?
Well, in the public debate, it has changed. I believe at the Supreme Court level, they are still largely connected to the Constitution, although not perfectly.
Okay, got it. All right, so this is the highlight of the show. This is where we have some fun because we get to hear Rick rant. Not that he doesn't rant through the whole show. I mean, let's face it, he's a ranter. He does rant repeatedly. But this is the segment that we actually call Rick's rant, and we affectionately call it outside perspective, because as opposed to Jay's inside perspective, Rick has never worked in government. He just has an outsider view on how things should work. So let's have Rick's rant.
Okay. But actually, before we do Rick's rant, someone proposed a new name for our movement, or at least maybe one campaign that we might do in the movement. And I wanted to get your guys' impromptu thoughts. This is the first time you guys have heard this new name. So live on the Hangout, on the show, the idea was to focus on the prioritize part of Cap and Prioritize, because that's where all the new messages is and so on. And so the proposed name is Organize to Prioritize.
Okay.
Organize to Prioritize. So that would be the movement, and we would show how, you know, the right wants to prioritize to make a spending cap politically viable, the left wants to prioritize in order to pursue social justice, and so it, we can define it in terms of everyone's needs, but the movement as a whole is a little bit less political. It's about organizing to have government actually prioritize spending instead of just, you know, pretend to.
I think that'll have a really big appeal to the OCD segment of our population, for sure.
Oh, really?
And probably moms as well.
Moms? Okay.
Yeah, moms like to organize and prioritize their households, so, you know.
Yeah. We talked about before.
Well, the organize here isn't so much like tidying up the room or government.
I know, but that's the organize. When I hear that, that's the impression that I get. Organize.
Really? Okay.
To prioritize, yes. I don't think about organizing people into a movement. I think about organizing all this stuff around my desk.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. Okay, Jay, what do you think?
But it does but it does need to be. But it's the same thing, though. Once you've organized your desk, it is a more efficient device.
That's true.
So once the movement is organized, it becomes a more efficient instrument. Correct.
Yes, but do you want to explain all that? I mean, we're looking for a 10-second elevator pitch here, not a big long explanation.
Yeah, I know.
It's cute. Okay, I do like it. It's cute.
So it sounds like you guys aren't like incredibly for it or incredibly against it. It's just kind of.
I'm not always a fan of rhyming.
Oh, really?
That's just me. Yeah, but that's just me.
I rhyme all the time. I rhyme all
like
the time.
I like rhyming. I'm a big fan of Dr. Seuss. Yeah, I like to rhyme.
Dr. Seuss, I couldn't come up with a rhyme. He made up a word.
Yes.
He was cheating.
That's not a word.
Yeah. Dr. Seuss cheated. He's a cheater. He's a rhyming cheater.
But I like
yes,
it.
And sometimes his rhymes did not rhyme. Sometimes.
Yeah.
However.
Okay, so thank you for that little diversion. We'll go now to Rick's rant. My rant today is about these philosophical individualists. I ran into one this week in Washington, D.C. This is a person who, I won't name any names, but this person believes that only individuals exist, only individuals take action, and so the collective doesn't even exist. It's a phantom. You can't even think about it as a collective. It's just you know, the improper use of force. It's one of these kind of arguments. And so it's just a huge break from reality. And this is a smart guy. This is a really, really smart guy. And it turns out he's an economist. And economists like to look at how individuals make decisions. And so some economists like to look at how government makes decisions at the individual level. And I think that kind of study is perfectly fine. But if you take that kind of training and you take it too far and you think that, oh, because only individuals make decisions in a way that you know, I look at it from economics, you know, that doesn't mean that the government as a whole doesn't have a process by which a decision is reached. And that decision isn't a decision that any one individual has control over or can move one direction or the other. It's this weird, you know, chaos theory kind of, you know, aggregate, you know, result of all the momentum. And so it's kind of like saying, oh, you know, Fred disagrees with me, or Fred doesn't disagree with me, because his neurons actually are what are just disagreeing with me. No, you know, the neurons make up the brain. Okay, so we can look at the brain as neurons, or we can look at the brain as this collective thing that produces consciousness, and you know, interact with it that way. And so I might be getting a little bit philosophical here, but I'm just ranting against all these people that think only individuals exist, and therefore we can't even talk about the collective or the government, and we have to pursue anarcho-capitalism, you know, directly or something goofy like that. No. You have to admit that the collective exists in order to cap the collective, and then only once it's capped can we then really prioritize and then create a wise government. So there you go.
Okay, well, clearly he's not interested in capping the collective if he doesn't think the collective actually exists. So.
No. He actually loves the cap and prioritize idea. He thinks it's a really smart policy. Okay? So he likes the idea. He just won't admit that it is the, you know, it has any philosophical significance. He won't admit that it pursues social justice. He just uses it as a pragmatic way to get the cap, you know, to actually happen. So like we were talking earlier about some other political figures on the right that, you know, they only care about the cap. They don't think about step two, which clearly is, it has to be about fighting about priorities, because what else can you do after you cap the government other than fight about priorities? You can't. That's all you can do. So, if he had a more active approach to thinking about the problem, he'd relax a little bit on his individualism kick. But nope, that's not the case.
Yeah. Well, I mean, clearly the buck stops with the individual, no matter what we're talking about, whether it's politics or whether it's anything, whether it's business, whether it's personal life. We are individuals who make our own decisions. However, I mean, it's very clear if you observe mob mentality, if you observe the power of people coming together, it's very clear that the collective works on many different levels, both what we can call positive and what we can call negative.
Yeah, the individual... on the positive side, I would say synergy is the positive side of it.
Yeah. And speaking of that synergy, clearly the individual comes first. I mean, you can imagine one individual existing in the world and no collective, therefore. But you need more than one individual to have a collective. So clearly the individual in concept comes first. But that doesn't mean the collective doesn't exist.
Exactly.
That would be silly.
Go ahead.
Well, have I told you guys my philosopher and the child joke yet?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, real quickly, the difference between a philosopher and a child. If you tell a child to stay out of the river, it'll be a short conversation because both you and the child knows what a river is. But if you tell a philosopher to stay out of the river, it'll be a long conversation because philosophers have not yet agreed what a river is. And that's simple. Philosophers, in the search of precision and in the pursuit of truth, and what else can they do? They run into these barrier questions, like in terms of defining things, and their problem is that if you try to define a river in a moment in time, it kind of ceases to exist as a river. It's just a collection of water. If you define it as the atoms that are in it, where is the boundary? It's really, really hard. And yet a two-year-old can know what a river is, and they may or may not respect your wish not to go in there, but they know what a river is. And so we have to, ironically, solve our problems at the level of a two-year-old instead of the level of a philosopher, because philosophers are just screwing themselves up.
Okay, isn't that a little extreme, though? I mean, even a philosopher can stand on the bank of the river and say, yes, I see where the water is flowing. Water is flowing past us. We have decided as a society to call this a river. I understand. End of conversation.
With most philosophers, they would admit that's what the common people think. And yet, if to actually define the river requires...
The river is where the water flows between the banks of the ground. That's it.
But what about a river that dries up in summer?
Then it's a dry riverbed.
Is it the same river or is it a different river? Can you walk into the same river twice? When you step into a river and then you step out.
It's the same river,
when you step
but
in
different
again,
water.
Is it the same river?
Same river, different water.
Philosophers disagree. Philosophers disagree.
Same river, different water. Same location equals same river. Oh, anyway.
Yeah. But what if a landslide happens and the river changes its course? Is it the same river?
It's still a river. It's still, if you say stay out of the river, it's still valid as this is what I stay out of.
Yeah.
regardless of any other argument you can make.
Yeah. And speaking of what I stay out of are conversations with philosophers for this very reason.
Well, Rick's a philosopher, though. You have conversations with
him. He's the mad philosopher. He's different. He's not, and he and I aren't going to argue about what a river is because we got bigger fish to fry.
No, you got.
We'll argue about which fish, but.
Yeah.
Well, you like quantum physics, even, to get away from philosophy for a second, quantum physics. The study of, subatomic particles and the energy.
Yeah,
and the
we don't know whether the cat's dead or alive until we observe it. I know.
I wasn't going to talk about that. I was going to say that quantum mechanics cannot describe where a star begins and ends, where the boundary of a star is. To quantum mechanics, it's all just energy fields and probability and so on. But we can look up there and see a star, and we can take a photograph of the sun and say, okay, that's a star, and then there's the boundary more or less, and it's good enough. And
you have to look at the world on different levels. You can't just.
Yeah.
I mean, we understand that this is not solid. It's a bunch of little particles. We get that. There's air in there. We get that. We know that everything is energy. Okay, that's understandable, but. From a reality perspective that we have to live in every day, these things around us have defined uses and defined names, and we have to operate within that parameter while we're on this plane. Otherwise, it's time to go. Just saying.
And yet, philosophers disagree.
Okay. All right. Well, okay.
Some would agree with you and some disagree.
And how's that working for them?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, every couple hundred years, philosophers have something really important to say. And I like to joke that this is one of those years.
This is your time.
Yeah, all right. So we'll listen to you about that, but we're not going to listen to you about the river. All right, I see we're running out of time here rapidly. So anyone listening, check out the Political Fix at politicalfixradio.com. That's our web address, politicalfixradio.com. And if you go there, you can see some past episodes, both the radio show and the video, and you can find out more about the movement, and you can see Rick's TED Talk, and so on and so forth. So, politicalfixradio.com. On behalf of myself, Jay Amernick, and Rick Raddatz, have a fantastic week, and we'll be back with you next week, same time, same channel, on The Political Fix.
Thank you for listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. On behalf of Rick Raddatz, Jay Amernick, and myself, Heather Vale Goss, we're glad you chose to get your fix with us. We need reform to fix this country, and incentive reform is what will make a difference. The five economies and resources laid out in Pentonomics and the strategies we call cap and prioritize are the focus of Rick's vision of the optimal political future. Every week we talk about the answers we've dug up among ourselves and with political experts who have the ability to make change happen. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com.